Okay, so today's topic will be focused on surface and interface interactions. Okay. What are the things that we are familiar with? Contact angle, for example, or wetting phenomenon. But there are something that maybe already in what you learned before, but not thought in the context of surface energy or surface forces. So I would like to use the example of melting and condensation to show how size matters. Okay, and to the end, we would like to also broaden the horizon and see how this surface and interface interactions actually will be changed when we look at nanotextured surfaces. Or sometimes you heard about so-called lotus effect, right? Lotus leaves, for example, appears to be water repellent. Why they are water repellent? It's actually a combination of surface chemistry and surface geometry that come into play. Okay, so let's first again quickly revisit what we had for Monday's lecture. So in fluid, we already now got to know that there are very similar coupled transport. When you apply the electric field, you can have a motion of either charged species or polarized species. Okay, motion or migration of polarized species also can couple now to mass transport or sometimes reaction or mixing. And particularly in the case of electric charge transport, we see that there is a mobility defined for ions. And this mobility is inversely proportional to the mass, okay? The mass. And from that, we see that it is possible to make use of this ion migration for the purpose of separation and identification of different chemicals, okay, chemical species. Okay, so this famous example from all this CSI series is really gel electrophoresis. Using gels, you will be able to maintain a good ion migration, okay, high ion migration or mobility, but lower the diffusion. Okay, so onto really the plate, you start to see separation of different species over time. So this is really the principle of mobility in gel electrophoresis analysis. Okay, so electrophoresis is interesting, but there are some limitations of using electrophoresis if you want to really move or pump fluid. To understand how electrokinetics works really effectively in micro scale, then we have to really look at this very important interfacial phenomena, that is electric double layer. Okay, this electric double layer is formed when there are separation of charges onto a solid-liquid interface, solid-fluid interface. Okay, and this separation of charges is balanced or maintained by thermal excitation. So we see there is a characteristic length, and this characteristic length is really just the competition between thermal energy and electrostatic energy within this separation region. And this is called a Debye lens. Okay, we show that this Debye lens approximately tells how important is this disperse or diffuse layer really that extend into the bulk fluid. Right, it is a very sensitive parameter that is related to ion concentration, as you see here. Okay, depending on the type of species involved, depending on the concentration of species, you will have significantly different Debye lens. So what is the immediate impact of Debye lens? there are a couple of things that we already learned. The bilens is, again, a characteristic lens of these movable charges. So if now your physical dimension of the channel becomes comparable to the bilens, right? Which is really not that small. If you have something of a micromolar, then the bilens can be really in the order of microns already. Okay? A micromolar solution will give you a bilens of micron. And your channel, even at 10 micron in size, start to see the effect of kind of interacting double layers. Okay? So this is one important result from the bilens. The other important result from the bilens is that we already see that really it inversely tells that now there will be a electrostatic charge stored, electrostatic charge stored within this separated layer. Right? What it is? This is a really just a capacitor. This is really just a capacitor. So nowadays there is a really just a mixed trend of batteries and capacitors. Okay, batteries and capacitors to some extent serve the same purpose, right? You really load it up with a circuit. Now they start to discharge. To the very fundamental structure is really the bilayer. It's really the electrical double layer that stores the required electrostatic energy. That stores the required electrostatic energy. Okay? Batteries, actually, the newest version of batteries or generation of batteries are sometimes called super capacitors. Okay? Really, it's electrolyte-based capacitors from this bilens argument. So if then you have a way to manage or pack many of these, again, super capacitors, okay, according to a fluidic or structural arrangement, then you can really increase the volume energy density, right? This is how you can make a super compact and efficient battery or capacitor. So the bilens is a very important parameter to consider when you are in the energy conversion business. Okay. And the other related effect that we talk about is once you build a bilayer, and you apply an electric field, then the charges on this bilayer start to move separately. Right? They have positive charge and negative charge. And one type of charge is bound closely or more effectively to the surface. So the other part of the charge actually moves more effectively. The charges in the diffuse layer moves more effectively. And now, once there is a motion of this diffuse layer, remember from Newton's shear law, we generated a shear effect, right, to the surrounding solution. But this shear, unlike the case of the quiet phase in a quiet flow, you have to assume a zero velocity in the edge. Here, everything from the edge is moving. The center part is free of that non-slip condition. So you actually can have a uniform velocity at the center of the channel. Right? So you're sharing this from, now you're just like moving a liquid piston. And as a result, the center part of the fluid gain the momentum. Okay? So this is a result of electro-osmotic effect. And the way you estimate the fluid flow rate or speed is now really based on the competition between electrostatic force and viscous effect. Okay? Right. How significant it is? Actually, electro-osmotic effect has been already found to lift even macroscopic parts. Okay? If you really build this in a porous membrane like channel, you can even generate forces that are comparable to muscles or other basically hydraulic actuators. Okay? The energy conversion is actually a very attractive part from electro-osmotic effect. And we also mentioned last time about electro-osmotic flow. The uniqueness of this flow is they really generate a so-called plug-like front profile. Okay? And this plug-like front profile is very important for mixing and really facilitated reaction for chemical analysis. So this, if you are interested, please take a look of some related website and journal papers. Okay, so this is electro-osmotic flow. All of electro-osmotic flow and electrophoresis are usually combined really weakly distinguished. Okay, they are all belonging to the group of electrokinetics. Okay, however, they all require, in this case, some motion of the moved, basically charge species. If you now are concerned about charging in the fluid, or sometimes this is really a something that you want to avoid. For example, if you are trying to deal with let's say living cells, then charging it almost will kill it. Okay, so in that case, so-called dielectrophoresis is a preferred method. Instead of acquiring a static charge, you would now really polarize. You would rather polarize these cells or particles within the solution. Okay, this polarization do not generate a net charge, but instead there will be a separation of surface charges. Okay, so for example, along this sphere, there will be more positive charges around one end and more negative charges on the other end. Okay, so the whole particle acts more or less like a dipole. Okay, and now if there is a field gradient, then this particle will move along the gradient direction. Okay, and depending on whether it's a positive polarized or negatively polarized, you can really tell when it will flow into or where it flow will it it flow into, and you can make it more fancy structures like so-called traveling wave dielectrophoresis that allows lifting, rotation, and sometimes even a traveling motion or translation of particles. Okay, so that's really the general picture about electrokinetics that we covered. And today we will now start to talk about surface effects. Okay, surface effects actually is something that we usually do not pay much attention to because of they are relatively weak in the macro world, but it becomes more and more important as we see the examples of electric double layers. So what is a surface? What is a surface effect? The simplest version will be when you start to play with soap bubbles. Okay, you use a wire and you try to pull the wire away from solution. And what you see is there is a So film, right? So film start to build up. And once this film start to build up, actually, there you need to exert more force to lift it up, okay? And this is actually a demonstration of surface force that are related to this created new surface area, okay? So how it is measured? Usually, we like to say that surface force is proportional to the length that is applied, or contact lines that is applied to the surface, okay? So, for example, if you have now a wire and then you bring it up from the foam soap solution, then there are two edges around this wire, and you have to count both lines. They all contribute to a surface force when you are increasing this area, okay? So this is why you see a 2 gamma L force applied, a gamma being the surface tension of our surface energy of that liquid involved, okay? But on the same time, if you do a integral of this force along the path, for example, H, right? You start to see that gamma L and H, DL, or gamma L and H gives you really a measure of energy. So this is why we say actually surface tension is also a measure of surface energy. Surface tension force is also a measure of surface energy. Depending on the area change, you actually measured the change in the total internal energy, or so-called Gibbs energy. So when you look at the units, they actually can be either of energy density per area or force per unit length. Okay. And if we generalize this, yes?
Can you go over why you have the factor of 2 there?
Because when you pull up a wire, there are 2 edges involved. Okay? So that's the reason you need to count both ends. They are all being put away, right? So if there's only one contact line of liquid involved, then you only need to consider that force. In the case of droplet, for example, pendant droplet, then the surface force is around the perimeter of the meniscus, right? So then you only need to consider that line. But when there is a film like this being pulled away, you will have to consider both. Right? So this is a 2L. Why there is a 2L here? Okay. Now, from now, we like to extend this concept of surface tension actually to more generic case. There, the moment you separate solid from liquid, or solid from solid, you create a new surface. And you are going to actually break the system by adding more energy onto it. And the energy that you pay off actually is in a very similar fashion like what we do for the liquid. Okay? So in general, every system, solid, liquid, or even you can consider when there is a gas, when there are interfaces involved, then there is a surface energy. There is a surface energy. But in general, we talk about surface tension more, you know, on the base of liquid. So microscopically, we say, where is the surface energy or surface tension from? Surface energy and surface tension really comes when we look at the changes of the states across the liquid or solid interface to the vapor phase, or more like, you know, less dense phase. Right? So, for example, if I consider the force acting onto this line of atoms, right? If they are in the bulk, then every direction the force is balanced. The force is balanced from their neighborhood, top, bottom, left, and right. But the moment you find them located on the interface, right, there will be a net force from the bottom neighbors, that is not balanced. Okay? And as a result, you have to really now constrain the surface. So this is a very simple explanation of surface force. Okay? If you like to work on math, I can show you, but let's keep this as qualitative at this point. Okay. Now, what is this surface tension doing? Okay. A very simple example is when you put a droplet onto surface, onto a solid surface, and you look at the droplet, they form usually a lens-like structure, right? And there is an angle involved. There is an angle which we call a contact angle. Okay? Actually, it doesn't matter that you have a liquid or a liquid to solid or liquid to liquid interface. You put a oil onto water, it will form also a contact angle. Okay? So what we are what is the origin of this contact angle? If we now understand that from force balance or energy balance, then this system become easier. Okay, so there will be a surface force, and this surface force always works or act onto the contact line. Right? And this is what you see from the liquid to solid interface. There is a contact force or surface force that describes a solid liquid interface energy. Okay? The moment you add, for example, an additional volume of droplet, then this line will move. Right? So that tells the direction of this force. Okay? And likewise, there is a surface to vapor can interfacial force. Okay? And these two forces are all lined up onto really the tangential direction. Then how come we have an angle? This angle really comes when we consider the geometry or the shape of this meniscus. Okay? So the total energy now that is acquired when there is a liquid droplet, okay, will be really now the surface energy of that, again, truncated sphere, right? This is the surface energy we are looking at. Okay, so if you now let this surface energy balance out really the competition between the surface to vapor or surface to solid to vapor and solid to liquid interface, you end up with a cosine theta. Cosine angle that really tells how the droplets will spread. Okay? So this is really the Young's angle. It's you can understand it either from force balance point of view or from the really energy point of view. Okay? So now we will come back to this point later. Now we have three different surface energies that are involved. What you would do if now you can make a change of this? What could you do if you can make a change of surface energy? For example, if your surface is not homogeneous, it's not uniform in a surface energy, then the force that are exerted from left hand side and right hand side will not be balanced. Okay? And as a result, you will generate a net worth that moves the chocolate along the gradient direction, which is really a difference in surface, in general, it's surface to liquid interface. Okay? You really can move droplet, even you can move droplet uphill without the help of a capillary tubes or so on. Okay? You will be able to do that just by designing the right, again, surface energy. What will be the example? This is still a very abstract example. You can't tell why or when this surface energy will change, right? Without any chemistry, it's probably still a very hard job. So let's try to use one example that looks now a little more familiar. So this example actually couples now electrostatic energy into the equation. Remember, we talk about the surface energy, and surface energy of solid liquid interface is one of the players, okay? So when you apply a voltage across this interface, remember now you can build a double layer, right? You can now build a double layer. And this double layer, or this amount of electrostatic energy, is now add up to the original surface energy. Okay? As a result, what will happen? You pull this one more effectively, okay? And you are reducing the contact angle because you add more forces. Okay? So contact angle now become voltage dependent. Okay? A hydrophobic droplet or appeared hydrophobic droplet upon voltage application can become more really hydrophilic just by coupling energy to it. Okay? So how you now make it moving? For example, if you now start to build a channel or build some kind of different, you know, a preferential capacitors on the surface, then you will be able really to slide or, you know, drive the droplet across. Right? So electrowetting is actually a old phenomena, but now find a lot more exciting, you know, applications now in the area of microfluids. So now let me take another example in the business of really nanostructure, nanoparticle or nanostructural materials. Okay, how we form nanostructural materials or how we form nanoparticles. Actually, you might have already learned that when you kind of joined the or enjoyed this, you know, casting class, in which you might have heard about the theory of nucleation. Okay, so let me revisit this nucleation and melting once more. Assume now we have a small solid particle. And originally, if only volume energy is concerned, then you only need to add, for example, this so-called entropy into that to melt it or solidify it, add or subtract this energy, okay, to change its shape. But because now we are in a liquid, okay, this can be a liquid of electrolyte, this can be a liquid of that molten metal, this can be a liquid of any kind. As far as there is a solid and liquid interface, now you have to consider the surface energy. And this is the surface energy that we just mentioned, okay, due to the constraints from, you know, the surface atoms. So this surface energy now is proportional to area, whereas the original, like, thermal capacity or you know, free energy that we are considering is proportional to the volume. Okay? So now when you put them together, you find that the if I try to plot them, these two actually cancels each other. Okay? As the size increases, as the size of the particle increases, one, like, you know, bulk free energy actually is moving more and more negative. This is in the favorable direction. But, you know, the surface energy prevents them to grow further. Okay? There will be a surface energy that prevents them to grow further. So, now, if I put really these two all together, and I will start to calculate, the critical dimensions in which there will be a steady growth. Okay? So, if this is a very, very small, it won't grow. It has to overcome an energy barrier until you start to see bigger and bigger particles. Okay? So, you have now, let's try to determine this critical radius or critical energy barrier. Then what we find is, again, it's a very simple equation, R to the cube equation and R to the square equation. The same analysis we have used before, like Gibbs, you know, Griffith's analysis of cracks, now can be applied over here. And we say the total energy change is this sum, and we take a derivative of this with respect to R, and we find now R become a function of surface energy and inversely proportional to that Gibbs free energy. Okay? So this is a critical radius, critical size of the particle to remain stable in such a solution. Okay? And the energy barrier that we're looking at is now really given by also a surface tension term. So now, how would this impact the solidification and melting? If you do just a very quick check about all this Gibbs free energy, then we see that this can be written as the melting temperature and a so-called over or supercooling temperature. Okay, the supercooling temperature means that you are already below, for example, the ideal or theoretical melting temperature, but the systems do not start to even solidify yet. There's no solidification yet. Okay? And this is the latent heat is released. Okay? Until they find something that is really a kind of seed for nucleation to take place. So you can see that this latent heat is a strong function of temperature, but surface tension is usually a weaker function of temperature, and that's a result. As a result, if your temperature increases, delta T increases, then you end up with smaller nanoparticles. Basically, you produce something from bulk equilibrium, let's say, solution, and then you try to cool it as quickly as possible and maintain that temperature. If there is no impurity involved in the solution, then they won't start to grow, right? They won't start to grow. But at now a critical, again, energy or a dimension, they start to really build up very tiny nucleus, and those tiny nucleus is now inversely proportional to temperature. Okay. How to make nanostructures? You actually can make nanostructures based on your knowledge of casting. For example, bulk gold, as I said, melts at about 1,000 degrees. If you now use 3 nanometer gold, they will start to melt even at a temperature around 300 degrees. Okay, this 300 degrees really tells how important it is, this large overcooling temperature. Right? So melting and non-solidification actually falls in the same roots. So typically, the nucleation site is in the range of 100 of the angstrom or tens of nanometers. Okay? So if you want to prepare a particle, now this is the hint. The game is to control surface energy and overcooling. Yes?
So the nuts have to get colder than ultra ice cream.
Pardon?
Are you familiar with the nuts?
They have thawed.
Little balls of ice cream. Mm-hmm. So do they have to get colder than if you have a gallon of ice cream?
Yes. Yes.
They do.
Okay? They do. But it's not that significant because of, different dots are not that small yet, right?
You see this effect where it become pronounced when it's closer to 100 nanometers or so. Okay? So what happens? I would like to add one more comment onto the ice cream. What happens is now the moment you buy an ice cream from fresh made store, story tells you that if you like to keep it fresh or good taste, you should eat early. Why? Because the ice cream the grains of the ice cream that you see, okay, will gradually grow up. They are now prepared in a lower temperature, but the moment you carry it over, right, in an elevated temperature, then this grain will grow up. You actually lose that same taste. Okay, so don't really store or keep your Häagen-Dazs in a refrigerator for a long time. That doesn't work. That's just a waste of money. Okay. So this is cell solidification and melting. Now, actually, if we use the same concept and same analogy, and look at liquid to vapor phase, we see a very similar effect. Okay? What I'm saying, you change the size of the droplet, the evaporation rate is also changing. Okay? The evaporation rate changes because we have introduced an additional pressure from surface tension. Okay? And again, if you like to do the math, you probably will use, you'll find the change of total internal energy of that gas state, which leads to a famous equation of so-called Kevin's equations. Okay? This Kevin's equations links the actual vapor pressure to the so-called saturated vapor pressure, for example, of water is in a few percent of atmospheres, but water droplets can still form, okay, even at such a large pressure condition, and that's mostly because when they start to form a droplet, they become stabilized. So, how significant is the effect? For example, if I have a particle or a tip in the size of 100 nanometers, right? Then even at a humidity of about 90% of this really, dew point, okay, PV over P0, P0 is the dew point that we usually talk about, the condensation will start to occur. Okay? So that means you have a small protrusion on your for example, refrigerator or on something that you like to keep your cold drinks, then this tip becomes the site for condensation. Of course, you have to be careful. This equation actually can give you both directions, both possible results. If your surface is water repellent, it's water repellent. Or if the surface energy actually works unfavorably on that surface, then you can have the reverse effect. You can keep the surface dry even it is at dew point or, you know, the theoretically considered, you know, condensed region. Okay? The droplet wouldn't like to stay on top of it. Okay? So this is really the effect of surface energy in evaporation and condensation. Okay? So before we stop, I would like to also bring to your attention about now the effect of geometries. Okay, this is not really the condensation picture that we're talking about. We're introducing a droplet onto the surface and see what happens. And nature actually provided many different examples. Okay, we already see lotus, as I said, you know, that really appears to repel droplets or self-clean after raining. Okay, there are examples from animals, ducks, or, you know, birds' feathers. Okay, and water striders, for example, if you look at their legs, there are also many, many different textures. Those textures are used to enhance their capabilities of water repellency. So what really drives this behind? Actually, it turns out to be quite a quantitative model that we can develop. For example, if we consider the actual surface instead of a plane, right, a flat area, now we add a lot more surface area onto it. The surface area, which we consider over here, is a projection, but the actual surface area, due to the texture, is a lot larger. So because of that, the cosine angle that we're seeing in a macroscopic level is actually an apparent angle. It's not the angle that is really due to an ideal flat surface. So simply put, if I now try to stretch this surface, rough surface, back to a flat area, then I reduce back to the Young's equations. So this R is really a measure of surface roughness. Okay? And this is not only the story. There is an even more complication behind. So when there is a droplet onto such a textured surface, there can be also bubbles, and those bubbles now repel further the wet, okay, of the droplet. So this can make even more complex of the apparent contact angle, and this is a famous as Cassie and Bastard theory. And I will probably stop over here, but you know, next time when we meet, I'll talk about what's the difference between them. Okay. Homogeneous wetting and heterogeneous wetting. What is really the difference? Can they all help us, you know, or make our job easier when using this texture surface? Okay. So I would like to recommend again some readings for you. Actually, I'm sorry. This is for surface tension is, I think, 2.6 is what we are looking. All right, I'm finished now.